Please turn in your Bibles to Luke chapter 24, beginning at verse 1. Luke 24, beginning at verse 1. We come this morning to the final chapter in Luke's Gospel. We're so glad it's here, because if it ended at verse 56... we wouldn't be here as a church. No resurrection, no good news, no gospel, no church. But there is a resurrection. I'm going to read from verse 1 through to verse 12. On the first day of the week, very early in the morning, the women took the spices they had prepared and went to the tomb. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb, but when they entered, they did not find the body of the Lord Jesus. While they were wondering about this, suddenly two men in clothes that gleamed like lightning stood beside them. In their fright, the women bowed down with their faces to the ground, but the men said to them, "Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here. He has risen. Remember how he told you while he was still with you in Galilee, 'The Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men, be crucified, and on the third day be raised again.' And then they remembered his words. And when they came back from the tomb, they told all these things to the 11 and to all the others. It was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary, the mother of James, and the others with them who told this to the apostles. But they did not believe the women, because their words seemed to them like nonsense. Peter, however, got up and ran to the tomb. Bending over, he saw the strips of linen lying by themselves, and he went away, wondering to himself what had happened."
Death is nothing. It's the kind of thing an action hero might say in some action film. Might say, "Oh, death is nothing." But we all want to tell ourselves that, don't we? We all want to tell ourselves death is nothing. And we give ourselves ways in our society, amongst ourselves, when we're thinking about it for ourselves, you know, on a personal level, but also when we're talking to others, we like to give ourselves reasons to feel okay about death. Things that reassure us in the face of death. And there's a wisdom that's quite prevalent at the moment that says that we can sort of defeat death slightly if we remember things in a certain way, if we don't forget. I don't know if you've ever been to a memorial service and you've heard a eulogy for somebody, as I have, and they've said, you know, something like this, you know, "They will live on in our memory. If we continue to love them the same way we used to, if we remember them, those memories can't be sort of lost, and in that way they kind of live on through our memory of them." We can say that, and that will happen a lot. But the reality is that we're telling ourselves things to comfort us. Telling ourselves truths and telling truths to other people, or trying to come up with truths and trying to communicate those to other people in order to comfort ourselves. Because the fact is death is something that terrifies us. It's a big, looming thing. And when we come into that close contact with the enormous power of death, the seeming finality of it, we look for ways to reassure ourselves. We look for purpose in the midst of it. We find ways to reassure ourselves when we brush up against death. And every different culture has a different way of doing that. It's interesting to look around and see the different cultures and the ways they do that. I think in our culture, it's something we find increasingly hard to do. I think English society, more often than not, just the way that we treat death is we just pretend it's not there. We just ignore it and we hope it kind of goes away. Keep it at arm's length, live for now, and just pretend it's not a reality. That's what we seem to do a lot of the time. And I think that's just because we don't know how to deal with it. It's this big, big thing that looms over all of us, no matter who you are. And so we're caught in this kind of dilemma as human beings. We want to treat it like it's a small thing. We want to say death is nothing. But we simply don't have any way to really do that with any kind of certainty. The world doesn't give us any reason to do that, any opportunity to do that. because nobody comes back from death. So the world can give us kind of half sort of truths, little things that make us feel better, but can't give us any real certainty when it comes to death. And so we're left between that wanting to not fear it, but actually only telling ourselves half-truths to persuade ourselves that, you know, we don't have to. Well, in our passage today, we're going to be told by God with absolute certainty, with real clarity and power, what we can only mutter to ourselves in a half-hearted kind of semi-felt kind of way. Death is nothing. Death is nothing. We tell each other that and we wouldn't really believe it. We might say it might make us feel better for a little bit, but we won't really believe it. And the voices of the world will say things like that, but it's based on not much at all. Here we have the voice of God saying to us this morning, the seeming finality of death is nothing. We're going to come across a few people in this passage who are going to be taught something amazing about death, something just world-changing. They're about to be shown something that isn't just passingly reassuring, isn't just something that is, oh, that's nice, that makes me feel a bit better. It is true, and it flips their whole reality upside down. And it's concretely and amazingly true. So what we're going to do is we're just going to go through the passage just as it's laid out there, bit by bit. And as we're going to go through, we're going to see these things: the empty tomb, the amazing truth, and the incredible report. And I'm going to leave those up on the screen just as markers for you, so that if you drift off, you can kind of know where I'm at and you can come back into things. But we're going to start with the empty tomb. The empty tomb. And before we get into this part of the story, we have to make sure that we realize just how devastated Jesus' followers would have been at this time. Just how broken they would have been with what has just happened. We're looking in next week at the road to Emmaus, and in that story we have some of Jesus' followers, and they start to talk about a little bit about their hopes, the hopes that they'd have had for this man, this incredible man. They thought he was the Messiah. They'd seen him do amazing things, casting demons out of people and having such authority over these dark spirits that nobody could do anything about. This guy came along, and the spirits obeyed him. He did amazing things like heal the sick. He brought paralyzed people, people that had been paralyzed for all their life. Doctors couldn't do anything about it. He came along and just spoke a word, and bang, they were jumping around like children. In chapter 19, they come into Jerusalem. Remember how Jesus is received in Jerusalem? People are celebrating. There's a real sense. This is happening. All his followers would have felt, we're here, we're in Jerusalem, we're in the center. It's going to happen. This is it. And then, in a way that didn't seem to make any sense at all, in a completely shocking, sudden way, Jesus is arrested. He doesn't fight back. He's tried. He's beaten. He's humiliated. And he's killed. And it's over. Everything they'd hoped for, everything that was so exciting, gone. Basically overnight. They would have been absolutely devastated. And we know the story. We know what happens, don't we? But these people who'd loved Jesus and had believed in him and had such hopes for him, their world has just been shaken down to the core. And at the end of chapter 23, have a look at the end of chapter 23, we see some of these followers, this group of women. And when Jesus' body has been taken down from the cross, they follow the body, verse 55, and they see where the body is taken. They sort of notice where the tomb is. And verse 56, they go back to get the spices ready so they can return to the tomb to embalm it, as was the kind of burial customs. But between the burial and the beginning of this chapter, the Sabbath comes. And according to the laws of that time, the Sabbath, they have to kind of rest. They can't go out and treat a body on that day. The religious laws don't allow it. And so they've had a whole day of just coming to terms with what has happened, or trying to come to terms. Just not really believing what has happened and just thinking, just grieving. And then first thing, the next day, verse 20, chapter 24, verse 1, says it was very early in the morning the next day. They get the spices and they head out to the tomb. Mark's gospel gives us a detail that's not here. Mark's gospel says that as they were going up to the tomb, they were wondering, how are we going to get to the body? Who's going to move the stone out of the way so that we can access the body and anoint it with these spices? So they're wondering about the stone. But as it happens, that stone is not going to be a problem. Verse 2, as they get closer to the tomb, they see the stone has already been rolled away. The tomb is open. And as they start to get closer, they start to wonder, what's going on? They get to the tomb and they see inside the body is gone. The body is gone. They saw it being brought here the day before yesterday. Where's it gone? And they're alarmed. Not alarmed as they're going to be in a moment, but they're alarmed. Where's the body gone? What could have happened to it? Has somebody moved it? Who might have moved it? Romans? Why would they have moved it? Pharisees? Why would they move it? What's going on? And they're asking all these kind of questions, but they're asking all these kind of questions within the realm of what they expect, within the realm of what their experiences have taught them up until now. They're all kind of rational explanations, the Romans or the Pharisees. They've come across something puzzling, something surprising, and they're using their knowledge of life up until that point to try and explain what's happened. And their logic is sound, isn't it? They've come to look for someone that is dead. He's been put in the tomb. The dead person should be in the tomb. There's nothing wrong with that logic. But suddenly, what they're about to find out is the place where the dead person should be is now it's empty. But things are about to get even more amazing because we're about to be told the amazing truth of what's really happening here. The amazing truth. Verse 4. While they were wondering about what had happened to the body, suddenly two men in clothes that gleamed like lightning stood beside them. And these are angels. These aren't just two guys that have figured out how to keep their whites white. These are angels. When you have this kind of shining like lightning, that image is often used of sort of a supernatural kind of person. And we also know that they're angels because of the way the women react. Have a look at verse 5. They fall to the ground in fright. This is something from completely outside of their experience up until now. They've been wondering about the body, trying to explain things according to life and what they know of life. Suddenly this comes in from totally left field. They've never seen anything like this before. And verse 5, they, in fright, the women bow down on their faces to the ground. And this is as much in a sense of amazement and fear as it is a sort of wonder and reverence. You see this a lot in the Bible whenever, you know, something appears like this, an angel or something like that. People just fall on the floor. There's no way to deal with something like that happening to you. It's as much sort of reverence and awe as it is just diving for cover. Before they were kind of intrigued and puzzled by the empty tomb. Now they're just blown away. They're just blown away. And in Luke's gospel here, there's two angels. And you might know that some of the other gospel accounts have differing details around the resurrection story. So in some gospels, there's, you know, two angels. In another, there's one. And there are some differences in the details. But we needn't let the seeming contradictions in the differing sort of gospel accounts of the resurrection bother us. Because you can look at all the different details, and commentators have broken it down and kind of ordered it and kind of said, well, this happened and then this happened, and they have kind of explained that, and you can kind of do that. But we don't need to worry about that, even if differences can be distracting, because there's a few things that we should remember. Firstly, the differing details only serve to validate the truths that are in common with all of the Gospels. The fringe details, if you have a group of eyewitness accounts over one story, there'll always be details that differ in each account. But everything that each account says in common, you can be sure of. They might have missed a few little details, or people might have noticed different things, but if they all say ABC, then ABC is probably right. So firstly, there's that. Second, we must remember that the writer of this book, Luke, is a historian. And he was respected and known as a historian in his time. I've said this before, but there are archaeological artifacts that remain to this day, and there's one of them in the British Museum that you can go and you can see, and it talks about this man who's written this being a respected historian of his time, reliable historian. So people now look at this Bible and say, Luke, who's this guy? I don't know if I trust this. Nobody was thinking that at the time. Plus, there was a lot of people that had plenty of reason to not accept this truth, and yet that didn't happen. And thirdly, if we're going to try and battle with the skeptics on this, we're going to be on a lose-lose no matter what. Because if the details had all matched up, then they'd say, right, well, this is a fabrication. Because, you know, detailed accounts always have differences. And so we shouldn't let these things bother us too much, because the Gospels aren't primarily concerned with that. I've mentioned it now because I don't want us to have distracting questions in our head. But look at the women. They're not overly concerned with how many angels there are. They're down on the ground. Angels are right here in front of us. Right here, it's happening right now. What is going on? They're not concerned with which of the angels is speaking to whom. Not one of them is getting up and saying, oh, can I just check, were you talking to me or to her? Oh, I didn't get your name, by the way. That's not happening. They're flat on the ground. Their world is being flipped upside down. And these angels ask them this incredibly profound question in verse 5. Why do you look for the living among the dead? They're given this incredible truth. The angels know who the women are looking for, and they say, he's not here. He's risen. You're looking in the wrong place if you're looking for someone who is living, and the person you're looking for is living. So you're not going to find him here in a tomb, are you? He's alive. And then they remind the women of the fact that Jesus had always told them this was going to happen. Verse 6, remember how he told you while he was still with you in Galilee, the Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men, be crucified, and on the third day be raised again. Then they remembered his words. The amazing truth is that Jesus isn't dead. He's alive. And even more than that, his death, this death that had seen such an abrupt end to something kind of exciting, really exciting, was all part of the plan. He'd always known he was going to die. He'd always meant for things to happen this way. He hasn't been defeated. He isn't gone. He meant to do this. You can imagine the women. We thought it was over. We thought it was over. All of the, you know, the kingdom, everything he talked about, it was so exciting. We thought that it was finished. And now they see it's on. It's happening. He knew what he was doing. He's alive. That's still happening. The kingdom, it's all still happening. Must have been amazing for them. They know this is true now. They know this is true. And as amazing as it might be, they know it's true. And the reason they know it's true is because of two things. God steps in and does something kind of supernatural. He sends these angels. But notice what the angels do. It's in order to point the women back to the message that Jesus had been giving all along. And those two things work in tandem. The angels don't just rock up and say, yeah, he's alive again, and that's enough. The angels turn up, and they say, he's alive, and don't you see? He'd always said this was going to happen. Don't you see that was part of the plan? When we look at Jesus on the road to Emmaus next week, we're going to see him appear to people. And he doesn't just turn up and say, hey, recognize me, here I am. He turns them back to the scriptures and he points them back to the message that they had originally. Something supernatural happens, but it's in order to point people back to the truths that are there in front of them already. So these women, they've just given been given this amazing miracle, supernatural sort of visitation, but they're pointed back to the message through that age-old message about the Messiah who had come to die. And so now they truly believe. Now they truly believe, not that Jesus was just a good man but died. Oh yeah, I think it's quite easy to think that. Jesus was a good man, he died, sad, and he came back. That's nice. And make it quite small. So much more than that. So much more than that. Now they're looking at this and saying, it's happened. The thing that God had said was going to happen since the beginning of creation is happening now. This is the point where sin and Satan and death are broken and defeated right now. The most important event in the whole history of the universe. They don't just see Jesus defeating death and coming back from it. They see him winning for eternity over the galaxies and over the universe. It's huge. The women see that. They get that. They believe. It's an amazing truth. And it's a truth they've got to share. They can't just sit on this. And so they go back and they give a report to the disciples. And it's an incredible report. And it's an incredible report in the real sense of the word incredible. We use that word incredible in silly ways, don't we? Oh, this donut is incredible. No, it's not really, is it though? But this is incredible in a real way. You can't believe it. It's too unbelievable. Here, the report of the women to the disciples is literally incredible. It's something that is just astonishing. Verse 9, When they came back from the tomb, they told all these things to the 11 and to all the others. And Luke gives us a few names to identify the people to the readership so they know who it was. And they tell the apostles who these what they saw. But the report is just simply too unbelievable for the disciples. People that followed Jesus, people that loved Jesus, no, they're just too unbelievable. Verse 11, they did not believe the women because their words seemed to them like nonsense. So the disciples are doing their thing. These women turn up. They're excited. They're talking about something they've just seen. They're saying some things that are just way out there, that the tomb was empty, that the body wasn't there, and then angels appeared and told them that Jesus was alive again. Are you serious? Can you hear yourself, what you're saying right now? I mean, I know you're in pain, we're all grieving, but I think it's gone to your head a bit, seriously. Complete nonsense is what the disciples think. They don't believe, it's too far-fetched. The amazing truth that the women have come to see is simply too unbelievable for the apostles here. And this is the way most people think when it comes to the resurrection. It's just too unlikely. It just simply just doesn't happen. Death is a big door slamming shut at the end of life, and nobody comes back through that. Nobody. For someone to say somebody came back to life from the dead, it's just too impossible for most people to believe it could have happened. And that's what the apostles are like at this point. No, that couldn't have happened. That couldn't have happened. I don't know what on earth you think you're under some kind of delusion. That couldn't have happened. So the problem's with you. And they move on. That's nonsense. And they haven't believed the bigger picture because they haven't had their eyes opened to that truth the same way the women have. They haven't seen the bigger picture, what Jesus had said about himself. They haven't connected those dots. The women saw that big picture because God sent them something extraordinary that pointed them back to that original message. That hasn't happened for the disciples yet. And so no matter how close they were to Jesus, no matter how grieved they were by his death, they simply don't believe yet. They don't see what's going on. They don't see him as resurrected, as alive. The message that the women bring is just too incredible. It's just too incredible. But one of them, as crazy as the message sounds, one of them wants to know more. Verse 12, Peter. Remember back in chapter 22, right after Peter has denied Jesus those three times, and Jesus turns and looks at him. Remember what we talked about with that look? That would have burned into Peter over the last sort of couple of days, day and a half. He would have been haunted by that look. Everybody was grieving Jesus amongst the followers, but Peter was grieving and felt a loss, but also felt a sense of, I abandoned him. That last moment, I completely betrayed him. I abandoned him. He would have been haunted by that. And now somebody is saying he's back. He's alive. And so he doesn't just dismiss it like everybody else. He wants this to be true. And he looks into it. It sounds ridiculous, but he's going to look into it. Because if it is true, it changes everything. And so verse 12, he got up and ran to the tomb. Bending over, he saw the strips of linen lying by themselves, and he went away, wondering to himself what had happened. He doesn't totally get it yet. He wants to find out, though, and he will find out very soon. In the next chapter, we'll see that. But these three different groups, the women, the disciples, and then Peter, each of them are presented with this astonishing thing. Jesus, the body isn't there. Jesus is alive again. Death is nothing. Death didn't hold Jesus. Death has defeated it. For one group, the women, they see it, they get it, they believe. Suddenly for them, death is a small, small thing. Suddenly for them, death is nothing. Jesus took it on and overcame it, and so they know this thing that looms over everyone in the most ominous way is nothing. Its power is broken. For the disciples, however, death is still the great force. For the disciples, death is still too big a thing. And they can't think, no, Jesus didn't defeat that. That's death. What we're talking about is death. It's not just anything. And so they hear that someone suggests that Jesus might have defeated death, and they think, no, well, no, that's not true. And then one person, Peter, who hears something that sounds too good to be true, but instead of just dismissing it, like everybody else, he decides he needs to look into this for himself. I need to find out. It sounds crazy, but it just might be true. And if it is true, it changes everything. Well, as we wrap up, I'd like each of us here to think. Who are you most like? Who are you most like? Which camp would you fall into? When you think of the theme of death, and when you see a story here, an account, a historical account, of somebody, of Jesus, coming back from the dead, what's your reaction? Some of us here will be like the women who believed that Jesus had come back to life again and realized what that meant, not just for them, but for everyone in the bigger picture as well. Maybe that moment of realization, maybe for you, if you're in that camp, maybe that moment of realization came recently, maybe it came a good long time ago. But if that's you today, if you're like the women and you know that happened, and you know that's true, let me just remind you again of what it means for Jesus to have come back to life again, what it means. When Jesus died, it wasn't the sad end of a story that Jesus miraculously recovered from. I think we can treat it, you know how movies sometimes, right before the hero wins, there's a bit of a wobble. There's a bit of a moment where, oh, it looks like they're going to fail. And they're really struggling, and when they're last final push against all the odds, they beat the bad guy. We can treat the cross like that, can't we? We can treat it like a bit of a wobble before the final climax. That's not what the cross is about. Jesus isn't just defeating death here. He's using death to achieve his greater purposes for himself and for all of creation. It's so much better than a little wobble before the final victory. So much better. It's the ultimate victory. The ultimate victory isn't just to defeat your enemy. It's to take your enemy and to make him do what you want. So he's on your side. That way you are strengthened. You haven't just knocked someone out of the way. You are strengthened by the opposition. That's what Jesus does with death. It wasn't just a blip that he recovered from. He knew what he was doing. He went to it deliberately. And he took that great thing that we all fear and he turned it on his head to serve his purposes. So for our death, do you see what that means when we think about our death? All of our death, each of us, our death will only achieve what God has purposed for us. That's all it will achieve, what God has purposed for us. Death is not a big, scary end to life beyond which there's uncertainty and terror. For us, death is a doorway that we walk through to get to the real life, the real thing. The real life that is to come. So we need not fear death. Death is nothing. Because of Christ, death is genuinely 100%. It's nothing. We need not fear death. It is not this big mysterious end. It is not this big final unavoidable terror. It is now, with Christ, something that serves us. Something that saves us. Something that brings us home to where we belong. Maybe some of us, we're not like the women yet, though. Maybe some of us, this story just seems too unbelievable. And so, like the disciples, we think, nah, that's nonsense. I see that's nonsense. If that's happening, then what's going on in your mind is death is just too big an obstacle. You've decided, nope, nobody comes back from death. You've decided that. And that's the assumption that we can all actually make. But if we make that assumption and we're locked into that assumption, we're just going to automatically dismiss this. So when a story about somebody coming back from the dead is there, automatically dismiss it. And maybe there are some of us here today that are in that camp that think like that. If that's you this morning, then can I just encourage you just to take a baby step, what Peter does. Because that's the third group, Peter. Peter, he hears something unbelievable, something that sounded to him like nonsense. But he realized, if this is true, it changes everything. He saw something that looked ridiculous, looked crazy, and he stopped. And he said, what if it's true? And he looked into it. And there might be a few of us here this morning that are in that Peter category. You're interested. You want to know more. You're still trying to figure things out. If that's you, can I invite you simply to ask God to open your eyes. That's what happened to the women. They had that message from the Lord Jesus, I must die, I must come back again, that's what I'm going to do. But it wasn't until the angels came, God stepped in and sent the angels, that they realized that. They needed God to act to open their eyes to the message they already had in front of them. If you're still investigating things today, you have the message right in front of you in the Bible. You have the message. Now just pray that God would open your eyes to what is true. It doesn't have to be elaborate. It can literally be, God, help me to see what is true. Amen. He will hear you. As regardless as how amazing, how incredible the truth seems. The truth is, death is nothing because of the Lord Jesus. Death is nothing. Death is defeated. Death now serves our purposes and is the thing that ushers us into heaven. Why would we fear it? Why? Death is defeated. Jesus is alive. It seems incredible. It seems impossible. But if it's true, it changes everything.